So the question was asked, should one aspire to pronounce things in a specific way? We try to pronounce things correctly, and the question is, what is called correctly? So there were different traditions, and there were different customs as to how to pronounce things. We find, as we mentioned earlier, the tribe of Ephraim couldn't pronounce a shin. They made it into a sin. We find in the time of the Mishnah that Rabbi Chiya came from a territory where they couldn't make a differentiate between Aleph and Ayin. And there were a lot of people who could not differentiate between Aleph and Ayin. Just like today, us Ashkenazim, our Aleph and Ayin are the same. And it says in the Talmud there were people who were like that. In their town they could pray. If they came to towns where people could differentiate, they shouldn't pray. So perhaps an Ashkenazi in a Sephardi shul, perhaps he shouldn't be chazen, because they do differentiate between Aleph and Ayin and we don't. So that might be a problem. You know, there are many letters, and we find many sources in Tanakh and in Talmud that not everyone had the same pronunciation. And yet, the Talmud says that for the biblical mitzvah of chalitza, we do chalitza without a problem for one another. Now, let's say that you know what chalitza is, right?
Yeah, the guy knows, spitting in the
right. Room. Okay, so there's a whole declaration that has to be made by her and by the people present. And maybe they have different pronunciations. From this concept that in chalitza we validate one another, and other sources of a similar nature, Rabbi Feinstein proves that whatever pronunciation has a tradition, meaning there is a locale where people speak that way. Tradition doesn't mean that those people can say, you know, 2,000 years ago they spoke this way, but rather, they, all of Germanic Jews, or all of American Jews say, Vayomer. There are, their resh is an R. Now, did that exist beforehand? So there's a book called Otzer Minagei Ashkenaz that goes out to prove that the American R and the American O existed way back when, and he proves it from Gaonic script, that Rashi speaks about the Malipum. So we assume the Malipum is the Cholam. And in Rashi, it seems pretty obvious that it's not. So the question is, what's a Malipum in Rashi? What is that? We know there's a Cholam, that's the O. We know there's the Kamatz, that's the O. What's a Malipum? Okay, so he goes into that, and he sets out the Rav Haigon and others wrote describing pronunciations and how to make the A and the O and the O. And they described it with all kinds of comparisons, and you have to go to the zoo and hear the lion. They wanted you to see a lion. They said, if you look at the lion roar, then you could figure out how you pronounce this. So if you look at the lion yawn, you could figure out that noise is similar to this. Think about it. How do you, if you can't record sounds, how do you identify sounds? So there are many people who tried researching it, and they have all kinds of proofs. And bottom line, there are opinions that say that you should adopt a specific pronunciation. There are such opinions in Halacha. And fine, whoever follows those opinions, good for him. There are opinions that say stick to your own tradition. And your own tradition would be, wherever you live, the pronunciation that they have. So let's say a person comes from America, and he wants to become Israeli, so he is going to try very, very hard to modify his speech to sound Israeli, but halachically, he should continue making the H's, not make everything into an Aleph like Israelis do. You notice Israelis don't pronounce a hey? Yeah, it's a problem. You should make a hey. There's a letter there. It's like an H. It's not an Aleph. But at the end of the day, if you were born in America or you were born elsewhere, or wherever you learned how to speak, if you adopt a manner of speech that a certain community has, that's legitimate. Is there one manner of speech that is the best? That is a machlokas. Some opinions tried researching this and claimed there was one which is the best. And many rabbis said, you can't know, and posed many halachic questions about that assumption. So there are all kinds of proofs, and then there are counterproofs, and then there are counter-counterproofs, and then there are counter-counter-counterproofs. You know, the response that goes back and forth, this has been explored, going back to Rav Haigon, and as late as Rav Ovadia Yosef, who comes out that the Sfardi way of pronouncing is the best, and Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Abed of the Badatz, who says, no way, the Ashkenazi way is the best, and you'll find response going every way. And if you speak to people who know enough about it, they'll bring you proofs for their way, which is fine. I'm not saying one's right and the other's wrong. I have no idea. I'm just saying, whatever you do, at the end of the day, so long as there's a community that goes that way, so no one can say that's not accepted halachically. Is there one way that's the best? Maybe. I mean, did all the Jews coming out of Egypt speak one way? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Was Hebrew ever pronounced in one way? It seems not. If in the time of the Talmud, and in the time of the Tanakh, you see there were differences and people pronounced things differently and spoke differently, so it seems pretty obvious that there never was unity in this. So can we say that there was one way that's the way Hebrew should be pronounced? Yeah, there could be. It could be that even though back in the time of Tanakh and in the time of the Talmud, there were differentiations, there was still one way which was the best. But who's to say which way it is? We don't have enough information, and some people say we do. So if your rabbi says we do, so you'll have to do what your rabbi says. These are questions that are big. These are questions that involve all of Israel. And questions of this nature should not be dealt by laymen like us. Questions like this, a person has to turn to his rabbi and ask his rabbi, you know, what should I do? And then go in accordance with that. And then a person has to be careful not to start arguing and saying, well, I have these and these proofs. Yeah, you could list 10 proofs. Good for you. But you're taking a stand in something that's beyond your shoulders. Meaning we don't have a right until we've mastered Talmud, mastered Halacha, and we're really big enough to answer questions for all of Am Yisrael, then we could express an opinion. Until then, we could say, well, I learned A, B, C, and D, and therefore I have a question about this. You have a question? Very good. You'll find someone who's learned enough. He'll give you 10 answers, and he'll ask 10 questions about your way of doing it. The questions fly back and forth. If you read the responsa, you'll see. And this has been going on for centuries now. Back and forth. It's not a new thing that we have the Yemenite and Sephardi pronunciation, and it's not a new thing that rabbis have said that this is the best and most accurate pronunciation. There are rabbis who said this back in Rav Kook's time, and Rav Kook didn't hold that way. For example, you guys are in Machon Meir. Rav Kook would talk Lashon HaKodesh like Ashkenazim. Rav Kook, when he spoke to people, he'd say, Moshiloi Mecho, Boiker Toiv. Yeah, he would talk like an Ashkenazi. And in his house, that's how he held you're supposed to talk. So this argument dates back centuries already. Is it possible that one's right? Yeah, could be. You know, there are rabbis who hold that way, and their students will go with what they say. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Rav. Sure. One of the best answers I've
heard about this. You said the best way is Sephardi. You
don't
know anything about that? Lovely or?
I don't know. I have it. Last time I learned it was 6 months ago. I don't remember. Okay? Yeah. Just a second. Show one something, he walked down. Yes, sir. On this point or something else? Yes.
In regards to the term, stands of the Shema, what the Shulchan Aruch brings, what's the stance of it?
Okay, just one second. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol
Nidro. Amen. There's enough coming in.
So there are many differences. It says in Shulchan Aruch that when you say Echad in Shema, you should prolong the Dalet. And it says in the commentaries that in our pronunciation, there's no way to prolong the Dalet. So that's one of the proofs that the Yemenite bring, that the Dalet should be Echad, that you could pronounce if you make it like a TH. That's very nice. But that's what I said. There are proofs, but there are counter proofs. So it's obvious that our pronunciation of the Echad was not the one that they had in mind in the Shas. But that doesn't mean we have a right to change. Meaning, when you change, you're going away from something that has a tradition into something that maybe does and maybe doesn't. It's definitely not your tradition. If you speak the way you were taught or the way people in your community speak, you're fine. When people start putting together a whole new way of pronouncing things because they think they figured out all the proofs and they got it right, well, if they're right, good for them. They're speaking the best way possible. But if they're wrong, then they're worse than the guy who's speaking his tradition, because they're speaking in a way that has no tradition. It's an invented way. That's the issue that people had with Ben Yehuda's pronunciation. Ben Yehuda adopted something similar to the Sephardi pronunciation, similar, but his own invention. Now, the problem is that that's not right. You know, it's taking maybe the better parts of certain aspects of Sephardi pronunciation, but it's inventing a new way of pronunciation. Now that has no basis. So that, we have no basis for saying that would be kosher. You understand? So the second you're starting to change from a tradition, if you're going from one tradition to another tradition, okay, I'm not sure it's an intelligent thing to do, I'm not sure it's legitimate halachically to do, but that depends, you know, there are different opinions among rabbis. But if a person decides, like some people have, I had a friend like this in America, Zarav, he researched all the pronunciations, he decided, he's taking this from the Temanite, this from the Sephardi, this from the Ashkenazi, and he's the only Jew in the world who speaks a perfect Hebrew. Good for him, you know, that's what he thinks, but at the end of the day, if he's wrong, then he's worse than every pronunciation that exists. Because his has no halachic validity. His is just his conglomerate. And you have to realize there are a lot of factors in pronunciation. There's the question of the vowels, and there's the question also of the pronunciation of the letters. And it's not clear that if you mix one and you don't take the other, that what you're doing is better. Meaning, don't forget, it's not only about how you pronounce the letters, Aleph, Beis, Veis, Gimel, Jimel, if there are two types of Gimel, Dalit and the other Dalit, Hey, Mapik, Hey, Vav and the other type of Vav, Zain and the other traditional how to pronounce the Zain, Chet and Het, Tet as opposed to Tuf. Oh, yeah, here, we have good, okay. Yud and Wood and whatever else, what other ways of pronouncing Yud? Okay, so there's a lot. And then there's the Komats and the Kamats. And depends on Kamatz Gadol and Kamatz Katan and the different traditions. You know, there are at least four traditions on how to make a Kamatz. Now go figure out which one's right and who said if you mix and match that you're doing any better. If you're going with one tradition, at least you're going with the tradition and you know what you're doing is acceptable. If you start trying to figure out what's right, you're on your own. And if you got it 100% good, but if you're less than 100%, then your invention is your invention, which has no validity in halacha. You got that? Okay. On this point?
Yes,
on this point. Okay.
What if you have two, like you got taught one way for certain things and then taught a different pronunciation for another thing? For instance, when I was learning, I learned like to speak with a, based on tradition, like a Sephardic rabbi taught me one thing a certain way, and then later I was learning also with an Ashkenazi and a different thing for a different area. So when I'm doing one thing, like dubbing this prayer, I'm doing it in one way, and when I'm dubbing this, because I learned differently from this guy, I learned different. And so it seems like I'm mixing, but I was taught that way. That was the way I was. And they had a tradition behind it. But now I have like two. And for different parts.
So that deserves a private conversation. Just a second. On this point, yes.
This point. So taking all this into consideration, if you're going by certain pronunciation, is there a halakhic issue with being Yotze, the Kriyat Torah?
No, because assuming that he's doing a tradition and you're doing a tradition, so fine. You could hear his tradition, he could hear your tradition. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein proves from Chalitza. It doesn't say if the brother-in-law is Yemenite and the sister-in-law is Ashkenazi, she has a problem doing Chalitza for him. She's going to pronounce it in a way that's way off according to his tradition. And yet we say all of that is lechatchila invalid. So that shows that every Jew can accept every other Jew. That's a very important point that Rav Feinstein makes. He says it about tefillin and Sefer Torah too. That an Ashkenazi could read from a Sephardi Sefer Torah and a Sephardi from an Ashkenazi, and Ashkenazi could wear Sephardi Tefillin and Sephardi wear Ashkenazi. Obviously, lechatchila we go with our own tradition. But that's a very important point. You know, there are two types of arguments in halacha. There's an argument where I say, I'm right, and I disagree with you. There's an argument where I say, I'm right, and you have no basis, you don't know what you're talking about. In halacha, usually our arguments are, I'm right, I disagree with you, but I give you halachic validity. And you find that starting from the Mishnah. The Mishnah quotes the minority opinion, and the dissenting opinion, and the opinion that's not accepted in halacha, and even Beis Shammai, where Beis Shammai's opinion, you know, Beis Shammai's opinion, you can't even rely on B'shas Adchak. Beis Shammai's opinion, we call it Eina Mishnah. It's like the opinion doesn't exist. So why is it even recorded in the Mishnah? We say Beis Shammai's opinion. If a rabbi has a terribly dire situation, a Shas Adchak, so sometimes he could rely on the minority opinion. But Beis Shammai, the whole Academy of Shammai, their opinion you don't rely on, even in a Shas Adchak. So even that opinion is quoted in Halacha. So in Halacha, we usually say Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chaim. There are both the words of God. In the Torah, there's room for many opinions. And there was once a guy in Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's shir who said, the Heter Mechira is ridiculous. Anyone who signs on it doesn't know what they're talking about, and anyone that eats it is a fool. So Rav Mordechai Eliyahu said, I have a question for you. During the Shemitah year, let's say there's $5 million worth of produce every week that's being sold in Heter Mechira. And if you hold that that's not valid, so then that fruit is holy, and the money you pay for it becomes holy. And then when it's resold, that money becomes holy. So if you do the math, you figure the farmers who raise the crops, they sell it for $5 million a week. It's really more than that. It's probably $50 million a week. They sell, let's say, $50 million worth of produce to the distributor. The distributor sells it to the guy who sells it to the next guy, who sells it to the store, who sells it to you. So this $50 million worth of produce has been sold at least three times, probably more like five times every week. So $50 million worth of produce every week, $50 million worth of money in the state of Israel becomes holy. How many weeks does it take till all the money in the state or most of the money in the state is holy? How could you ever use this money? If you hold that this opinion has no validity, if you're just going to knock it out and say it's nothing, well, if it's nothing, then you can't use the money, because all of this money has Kedusha Shvius. It has the holiness of Shvius. We say that the fruits of Shvius, whatever you pay for them, any amount of times you sell it, it always takes the holiness of the money. So now you have a problem. How do you pay for the bus and accept change and use this money for all your mundane things? The answer is that even if you don't rely on it, you don't knock it out and say it's ridiculous. And that's an important rule in halacha. Even though we might have an opinion that we go with, we respect other opinions, so long as it's a bona fide opinion. You know, a guy walks in and says, I'm a conservative rabbi, we might not drink the wine he touches. Because in our book, that doesn't have any validity. You know, a person that says, I mean, the conservatives claim the Torah was man-written. Okay, that's very nice. That's part of their doctrine for quite a few decades now. Hey, if that's what they believe, then they're not kosher Jews. I can't accept them as witnesses in my wedding. I have a problem with them. They forget rabbi. They don't begin to have validity as a Jew. I mean, they're a Jew, but I can't. I mean, they've gone against the basics of Jewish faith. So there, it's not like this is a dissenting opinion. This is someone who's just not agreeing with the basics of Judaism. But within Orthodox Judaism, so long as it's a valid opinion, so we respect him. We might respectfully disagree. But if I respectfully disagree, then if I'm quoting Ali on that Torah, I'll make a blessing on it. And not only I would, I do. I daven in Sfaradi shuls all the time. Yeah?
Can I ask you a question related to this?
Just saying, is there anything on this? Anyone else? Yes, sir.
It said there's Gimel and Gimel. I just wanted to say, I'm aware of many different traditions, and every place I know of that differentiated between Gimel and Avon Debusha, the Rafa is Rimel. So, some places have Gimel and Rimel, which I don't do. And other places, that's only in Sana'a, Yemen. And in Aden, Yemen, and Babel, and Andalusia, and Morocco, and Syria, it's Gimel and Rimel. So, they both have Rimel.
What I say is what I remember from the Halabim. But maybe I'm wrong.
Gimel and Rimel.
And Rimel? Okay. It's not what I remember hearing, but you know better than me. I'll take your word for it. Anything else, guys, on this point? Related. Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. But it's